expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guest do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
The Paranormal View. The Paranormal View. The Paranormal View.
You are about to enter a world that's not new. A world that will inspire you with pondering to do. A world known only as the Paranormal View.
Time now for the Paranormal View.
The Paranormal View from the Para-X Radio Network. The Paranormal View.
And welcome everybody right here to the Paranormal View on the Para-X Radio Network. I want to thank everybody for being here tonight, who's joined us and come over to listen on this nice, better day than it has been, I guess, but it's still chilly. But pull up a chair or sit down and enjoy the show. We got a great guest lined up for tonight. Everything is going fine, I hope, tonight. And it all works. Looks like everybody can hear. So we have with us tonight Barbara Duncan.
You forgot my name.
I'm used to saying everybody else's before I get to
No. Welcome, everybody.
No. But Kat's not going to be here. She is out of town. And Jeffrey will be here a little bit later. But he's coming back from... I guess the filming, so he'll be a little bit late coming in. But with that, we still have a great show lined up. Me and Barbara can handle it.
Oh, heck yeah.
Oh, yeah. And I want to thank those listening from around the world. We appreciate each and every one of you listening. And if you do have questions tonight of our guest, you can private chat them to either Ceiling Cat or myself, and we will get those questions right over to our guest. And because we've got a lot actually to go over, and I'm sure she's going to talk for about 4 hours, I'm going to go ahead and since I find it here, I'm going to let Jeffrey introduce our guest. So Jeff, why don't you go ahead and introduce our guest?
Exactly. Well, tonight's guest is lycanthropy author Linda Godfrey. Investigator and artist, Linda is the author of 16 books on strange creatures, phenomena, and people, including, but certainly not limited to, American Monsters, A History of Monster Lore, Legends, and Sightings in America, Monsters of Wisconsin, Mysterious Creatures in the Badger State, and Haunted Wisconsin, Ghosts and Strange Phenomena of the Badger State. She dwells in the Kettle Moraine area of southeast Wisconsin, along with her husband and monster dog, Grendel. She is a frequent guest on national TV and radio shows, including but not limited to Monster Quest, Seasons 1 and 4, Lost Tapes, Monsters and Mysteries, Sean Hannity's America, Inside Edition, Coast to Coast AM, NPR, Wisconsin Public Radio, and she's finally made it to the big time, to the Paranormal View. So welcome, welcome, Linda Godfrey.
Hello. Thanks so much for having me. And, yep, I'm glad to be at the big time. It feels great.
Well, we want to thank you for taking time to be with us tonight.
Oh, I'm honored.
Go ahead.
I just said I'm honored.
So. We got lots to go over. I was looking at your book, American Monsters. And I guess might as well start at the beginning. How did you get started in the field of searching for monsters?
Well, it was purely by accident. I had become a newspaper reporter for a newspaper that I had joined only because I wanted to do editorial cartoons for them. And it just so happened that one of the reporters quit, and I got along well with the editor, and he said, well, why don't you take her place? You know, you want to be a reporter? And I said, sure. You know, how hard could that be? It just so happened that one of the first stories I was assigned to do was to track down reports of what people were calling a werewolf, lurking around this 3-mile country road called Bray Road, right outside of my hometown of Elkhorn, Wisconsin. And when I looked into it, I was surprised to find out that not only did I think the people who were saying they saw this creature were not crazy, although I didn't believe it was a werewolf, but I believe they were seeing, you know, what they described. And there were a number of them, and they were very consistent, and they seemed like sober, credible people. But I also found out that our local animal control officer had a file folder that he had marked werewolf, in which he was keeping records of everybody who wrote him or called him and said, hey, I saw this thing, I don't know what it is, but if there was such a thing as werewolves, that's what it looked like, because it was like a wolf or a German shepherd running or walking on its hind legs, long shaggy fur, fangs, claws. You know, I know it wasn't a human, I know it wasn't a bear or anything else. And some of the sightings were in daylight. And the more I looked into it, the more puzzled I became, because it wasn't anything that the DNR officials or the police or the control officer could explain very well. The best that they could come up with to explain the fact that people were seeing what looked like a 6 to 7 foot tall wolf or German shepherd running and walking on its hind legs, chasing cars, dragging roadkill in their forearms, was that maybe they saw a coyote that happened to jump up, and they saw it in mid-leap, and for some reason they fixated on that mid-leap and made it seem like longer than it was, and maybe it was a sick coyote that just looked different. Well, you know, coyotes are lucky if they weigh 20 pounds and 25 pounds maybe at the most. They're not big animals, and I never bought that explanation. And the thing was that because, in my opinion, probably because it was a large contemporary group of sightings that people were calling a werewolf, that's very unusual in this day and age. And that got a lot of people's attention, and it went national within a few weeks. And somehow that made me the person automatically that people came to report their sightings of strange animals, not just the upright canines, but Bigfoot, big birds, you know, what have you, all kinds of strange things. And also the go-to person for the media, because nobody else at that time that I knew of was really bothering to collect and organize these kinds of reports. And this went on for 10 years. And after 10 years, I decided there was still so much interest, and it was only mounting, wasn't going away. I thought, well, I should probably quit the newspaper and write a book so it's all in one place and people have something to reference. And when the book came out, The Beast of Bray Road, Tailing Wisconsin's Werewolf, I was just deluged with more reports, you know, and so that led to Hunting the American Werewolf, which was portrayed on Monster Quest. I was asked then to co-author Weird Wisconsin with the Barnes & Noble series, and then I authored Weird Michigan, and then other werewolf books, and you name it. You know, I've also done a true historical crime. I have a novel out the last year or so called God Johnson, The Unforgiven Diary, and all this stuff, by the way, is on my website at just lindagodfrey.com. You don't even need the www, but you can get that whole list of books and information there. But that's just kind of how it evolved. And I always have felt that I had something of a responsibility to be the keeper of all this lore, if for lack of a better word. And I don't mean to imply by the word lore that it's merely legend. I think people are having real experiences. I don't pretend to fully understand what the creature is, but I keep encouraging people to report their sincere experiences, because I think the more that we get and the more we document, the more possible it is that someday we might be able to figure out what it is.
Now, this was up near where you live. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
You said that this guy had files going back. How far back was he cataloging information on sightings?
Well, the sightings file was fairly recent, because even though I had sightings back to like 81, which meant they'd been going on for at least a decade. And then later on, I'd get them from much farther back other places. But some of the people calling in were reporting 3, 5, 10-year-old sightings. Other ones were reporting quite new ones. But they had only just started calling him after there were a few that had happened very recently, and the person started talking about them. And then word of mouth got around, and people who were going, oh, that's what I saw too, then they decided to call him, you know, and report it. So he hadn't been doing this for very long.
Okay.
So when you went out to investigate, did you see any evidence or see anything?
No, not really. And at that time, most of the sightings that were reported on Bray Road were not of the nature where you could really, you know, go in and dig for tracks or, you know, hike into somewhere, because it's a 3-mile road of privately owned farmland. And, you know, not everybody was happy that they were receiving this extra attention. There were busloads of tourists all of a sudden coming down their road. Most of the sightings were just where it would be seen by the road at that time. People would be driving by, and it would be crouching, maybe holding, you know, some carcass in its paws, and then it would stand up and run on its hind legs into the cornfield, or it would run across the road. That's a common way of seeing it. I did have one group of junior high-aged children who were on a road near Bray Road and had been out sledding and tobogganing. It was in the winter, and they saw what they thought was a dog drinking some water at a little spring, and they went over to pet it, and then the so-called dog stood up and started chasing them. And they were terrified out of their minds, of course, but about halfway back to the farmhouse, they turned around, and it had just turned off into the cornfield. And this is what this creature, over 10 years, does just about without fail in almost every incident. People think that they're going to be eaten. They'll feel that it's very aggressive, that it wants to get them, may chase them, but at the last minute, before anybody gets hurt, it just veers off and runs into the brush.
But they think it's a quadruped, but walking as a biped?
Well, the body looks fully canine.
Wow.
In probably, you know, I'm going to say 90% of the cases that are reported to me. I do get, there's a 10% of weird things that I can divvy up into other categories. Things that seem like skinwalkers, things that seem like black phantom hounds, etc. But the main, huge main body of sighting reports that I get is very consistent. It's something that looks like a canine completely. It has pointed ears on top of its head, a muzzle, usually a long muzzle. I've had just maybe 2 or 3 times in all those years a shorter muzzle, like a different type of dog, like a boxer, reported. But most of the time it's a long muzzle with fangs. They will say that it has paws with claws, although sometimes the paws appear elongated, you know, a little bit longer or bigger than a normal canine's would be, which makes sense. If it is something that has adapted to standing upright, that would come in very handy. And then people will always say something like, you know, it was running really easily on its hind legs, but its legs were bent backwards. And by that, they don't really know the physiology or the anatomy of how the canine leg is put together, so they're not sure how to say it. But what they mean is that they're observing it running on its toe pads, as all canines do. Anybody who's got a dog, you know, you look at the little print that it makes, and that would be analogous to the ball of your foot and your toes, and then your, you know, heel up in the air, like you're running on your tiptoes. And that's how they're made. So where we're expecting to see a knee bending forward, we're actually seeing the hock or the knee and ankle joint bending backwards, because it's really more part of what we would as humans consider the foot area. And sometimes that print, you know, I do have prints that have shown up from different cases. And once in a while, if the creature, say, is in soft mud and it has to kind of bounce a little bit each time to take a step or it's sinking down a little bit, then that heel print will show up and look like a longer print. Took me a little while to figure out how that happened, but I've got another one where it was in some soft mud, and it was about springing after a deer, and you could see where the rear hoofs of the deer dug down, and it sprang out, and then you could see the elongated footprint of the upright canine as it also had to kind of rear back a little to get that oomph and spring out of the mud to go after the deer.
Now, has anybody gotten hair or teeth?
Definitely not teeth. I've had somebody find some hair that seemed to be really thick and matted and weird, and it was fairly near a sighting area. It wasn't, you know, right on the money, but it was literally in the neighborhood. And it was so thickly matted that I had to use one of those shears that they cut copper pennies with in the ads, you know, on TV, to get the piece off. And I took it to a DNR agent, they couldn't identify it. I took it to the DNR agent, and they did not know what it was. And so the Monster Quest people had it analyzed in the lab, not DNA, but just what they call a morphology, or the hair shaft structure.
mRNA, yeah.
Yeah, they did the morphology on it, and it came out cat.
Cat?
Right. I would have hated to see that cat, because it was a very large, it was about, you know, 6 by 7 inches and maybe 1/2 to 3/4 of an inch thick that came off of some animal, you know, so it was quite a hunk of fur, but it didn't turn out. So I've had people who thought they had Bigfoot fur, but the hair from the dog man, as I like to call it, or the unknown upright canine, is a little harder to come by.
Yeah, I would imagine. Well, it depends upon if it, and it looks like it was by rearing up and looking like it was going to charge at people, then veering off at the last minute. Like it was really defending its territory and not being that aggressive. Right.
Yeah, it seemed like it was trying to tell people to, and people would, this was the other weird thing, because it isn't supernatural for a canine to walk or run on its hind legs. It's just unusual because they're not built that way. Sure. And by the way, they all that I know of can also drop down on all fours and then get up on their hind legs when they can switch back and forth. So that sometimes people see giant quadrupeds, and they may be seeing one of these animals, but they wouldn't know it unless it happens to get up on its hind legs. So it can still do both. But it does. The other thing that it does is that people will sometimes say, not always, but sometimes say, you know, it was looking at me and glaring right at my face. I felt that it was sneering or jeering, that it was telling me somehow that it was better than I was, that it was superior, that if it wanted to, it could get me, that if I told anybody about it, it would come and get me, that it could jump in my car. I hear things like that from witnesses, which is weird because, you know, when's the last time you knew somebody who encountered a bear or a deer and came home and said, well, I felt that bear was telling me it was superior to me and it could get me if it wanted to, you know? It's Right. It's just, it doesn't, if you try and apply that to regular normal animals, it doesn't compute.
No.
But the one thing that they would do is try to appear as large as possible. That's nature's way of defending themselves is, want to be bigger than my opponent because then they'll run away.
Right, and it may, that standing up and kind of puffing your chest out and acting superior is... you're right. It's a normal defensive posture and aggression posture to look like you're going to be the winner, you know. And that's why they tell people if they're ever threatened by a cougar or some wild animal to pick up a stick and hold it over your head so you look bigger than you are. You know, it works both ways. Yeah, but that's a standard.
I got a question from the chat room. Mm-hmm. It's from Cy. He says, has there been any cases of it making any vocalizations, animal sounds, or otherwise?
Yes. And it's interesting because what people report is not the old cliche of the werewolf howling. You know, when people have seen it making a vocalization, or where they've had eyes on it, and they can definitely link a sound to the creature. What they describe, and I've had this reported by people who didn't know each other, at the time it hadn't been published or anything, the sound that they make is, people say it reminds them of some old-fashioned cappuccino maker or some kind of engine that's starting and stopping that has a very high variability in its pitch. It's a deep growl, but it'll go, and it's kind of like, kind of like that. I'm very bad at imitating it, but you know, a man with a good sized pair of lungs can imitate it much better than I can. It's much scarier than that.
And a cat will do that.
Yeah, kind of like a cat. Yeah, in a way, except deep. This is deeper and different. It doesn't have any of that rawr sound. It's more rawr. Now, there's another interesting case that occurred in 1936 that could have been a dog man. It has some attributes. It was a nighttime sighting, and he may not have had the very best look at it, but it was digging in a graveyard, digging on an ancient burial mound at a place that was run by some Catholic sisters as a sort of a place to care for developmentally challenged people. And in fact, John F. Kennedy's sister Rosemary was there. That's where she lived after her father had her lobotomized for many years until her death. But this was back in 1936, and the man was checking on the grounds, went to this area where there was a burial mound, and he saw this huge creature digging in the burial mounds, and it stood up. It had a muzzle, it had fangs. He made a drawing. He actually had his son, who was editor of a paper in, a newspaper in Racine, Wisconsin. And he had his son, when he was on his deathbed, draw a sketch so that he could leave this image to people in case it was ever any good to anyone. And when he encountered it on two nights, and the second night the creature looked at him, and it made a sound that he thought sounded like the word Gadara, which is the name in the Bible of the place where Jesus was casting out demons, and they went into the swine, and then the swine rushed into the sea, and that was it's called the Gadarene, was how they referred to the demon-possessed person, and it was in a specific region, you know, of that country. So that was interesting. And he said it sounded like it was saying Gadara, which sounds a lot like that variably pitched growl to me. You know, there's, I think there's a relation between the two.
Now I got another question from the chat room. It's from Ghost Soldier Doug. And he wants to know when the last sighting was.
Well, I get this now. Mind you, this is 23 years after my first story broke, and I still average 1 to 3 a week, which is a lot of sightings.
It's all in the same area.
No, this is from all over the United States, Canada, and the world.
Oh.
Wow.
Well, I think he's wanting to know the last sighting from this animal that you're talking about.
The last one seen near Bray Road, it wasn't on Bray Road, but near it, that I know of, and I say that I know of because I'm pretty sure most of the sightings don't even get reported. But the last one that I know of was just about a year ago, exactly a year ago. And it was a pretty spooky one. There was a farmer who was up late, and it was 3 in the morning, And last year, our winter was just a doozy. It was wind chills 24 below zero, like almost every night. And we had snow just piled everywhere. And he was out at 3 a.m. Tending to some animals or something. And he heard all of his animals start just like baaing and screaming. And he looked out his window and he saw a coyote running across his field as fast as it could go for a woods. And he just barely had time to think, huh, what's making that thing run? And then he saw a furry, shaggy-haired, wolf-headed creature. It had dark brown, furry hair, running on its hind legs after the coyote, keeping up with the coyote. And he said it was kind of hunched forward a little bit, as you might expect. You know, it had fangs. He was sure that, I mean, it was five times easily the size of the coyote. And for something to run on its hind legs that fast, because coyotes are very fast. If you've ever seen one run, they can really go. And this thing was giving it a run for its money and chasing it into the woods. And, you know, he had enough lights on that he had a very good look at it. And this was a person who was not a believer at all. He just thought it was a bunch of made-up stuff, even though he'd lived in the vicinity, you know, all of his life. But it was a pretty interesting sighting, and that was a year ago. I've had another one in Heartland, which is about an hour north of here, since then, over the summer. That was very interesting and very different because it was right in a city, actually, in a neighborhood.
Well, I know coyotes can be very, well, they can get into civilized areas. We have coyotes in Golden Gate Park in San Francisco now. But they tend to hunt in packs. Are these sightings all of just lone creatures? And have there been sightings of multiple ones at the same site? Or any, like, offspring?
Yes. All of the questions. Yes. The coyote was by itself, and it was not with a pack. It was with another coyote, and the reason I know that is because another property out there that I've been assisting the owner with an investigation for over a year, we've been putting trail cams out, sometimes as many as three, and we had trail cam footage of a coyote with another one just kind of watching its back that evening, and it's looking around, it's nervous, it's like acting real, it's eating, we put out deer carcasses for bait, and it's eating at this carcass and looking around like it's just, every once in a while it looks behind it and then it goes back to eating and then it looks up, and all of a sudden at 5 minutes to 3 a.m. it disappears. It's gone and it doesn't come back, although it's been eating hungrily all night on this deer. That sighting that I just told you about with the coyote running occurred right about 3 a.m. that same evening, about 3/4 of a mile from this property where we're conducting the investigation. And on the same side of that road, so it was a straight shot from one site to the other, and I'm pretty sure that coyote that farmer saw running was the same one that we have on our trail cam.
Wow. I've got another question also from Ghost Soldier Pat, and he wanted to know, has anyone reported that this creature has hurt anyone?
Yeah, that's a question that I get all the time, and that's a good one. My answer is not to my knowledge, unless there were people who just didn't live to tell the tale, if you know what I'm saying. The only one reported to me. Now, I've heard some other people say they had reports where, you know, different things happened, but that hasn't been my experience, and I don't have their information, so I can only tell you what I've received in reports. And again, it gets back to the thing where the creature just typically displays aggression, chases, makes people think they're going to be lunch or toast or whatever, dead meat, and then runs off. The only exception is a man who was hiking alone on a trail in Quebec. province, not city, but in the province. And he was unarmed. He came across a 6 to 7 foot upright wolf-like creature on the trail, and they had sort of a momentary stare down, and then the creature seemed like it was going to lunge for him. And he thinks he actually kind of got in its way, and it didn't really even mean to do anything, but on its way past him, it's one of its fangs caught his side and kind of tore a gash up in his flank, you know, and onto his hip. And he had to go and get stitches. And he told them it was a bear at the hospital because he didn't think they would believe it was an upright wolf man or whatever you want to call it. But, you know, he said, you know, at that range, if it had wanted to get me, it could have had me, you know. And if it had been something like a bear, you know, a bear would have, if it's that close, it's probably going to get you, and it's probably just going to tear out your middle and start eating you, you know, whether you're dead or not. That's what they do. This thing just went on, and he was close enough. It was broad daylight. He knew it wasn't a bear. It didn't act like a bear or look like a bear. And that's the only injury that I know of in 23 years, in hundreds of reports from this country and all over the world.
Now, it's almost break time, but before we actually go to a break, the two guys that's in the chat room, Ghost Hunters Doug and Ghost Hunters Pat, there are a couple of guys that I've been to have the, I guess, been with to a couple of different places. But they had the Cake Boss, because they're from over around New Jersey. They was on the Cake Boss show and had the Cake Boss make a cake of the Jersey Devil, because they were fixing to investigate the Jersey Devil. And you talk about the Jersey Devil as one of the creatures in your book. And when I say creature, that means everybody has to take a drink. So I don't know how long it would take you to talk about that. If you want to wait till after we come back from break and talk about it, that's fine, because it'll probably last a little while.
The Jersey Devil actually could take a while. Maybe instead of that, if we just have a minute, I can mention that the book American Monsters is not just about the upright canines. That's just one chapter.
Oh, yes.
And what I wanted to do was emphasize the fact that from day one for 23 years, people have reported all kinds of creatures and monsters to me and to other investigators. There, you know, I have some from some other colleagues of mine in here, too. And what I wanted to do was show the breadth and the depth of how many different kinds of really bizarre animals or creatures, entities, whatever they are, people are seeing around this country.
Yes. And we're going to try and cover as much of the different things in your book as we can tonight. And there's quite a bit. And like you said, it has a whole range of different things for us to talk about.
Sure.
I think what we'll go ahead and do is go ahead and take a break, probably about 6 minutes, something like that. And I guess, Barbara, I'll let you take us out since nobody else is here, and I'll bring us back. Does that sound okay?
Works for me.
Yeah.
Everybody, you're listening to The Paranormal View here on Para X Radio with your hosts, Henry Foister, Jeffrey Gould, and Kat Cloca, who are not here this evening, and myself, Barbara Duncan, with our wonderful guest, Linda Godfrey. We're talking cryptos tonight, folks. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
It's always time for the dead to shine in Hollywood. The legendary Dearly Departed Tours has stepped up their ghostly game by offering the Hollywood Ghosts and Legends Walking Tour. Dearly Departed has long been an orb of hope in the paranormal world, having been featured on television's Haunted History and Haunted Collector. Their terrible tales have been made infamous in Marla Brooks' The Ghosts of Hollywood books. The new Ghosts and Legends Tour is a 10-block, 70-minute dusk-time stroll down the Boulevard of Broken Dreams. You'll be guided through the golden age of Hollywood and see where the unearthly Bela Lugosi, Lon Chaney, and the calamitous Black Dahlia are still said to linger. You'll see Hollywood's gothic hotels, legendary theaters, and restaurants, never forgetting their permanent occupants. No stranger to investigations, Dearly Departed Tours has first-hand knowledge of some of these hauntings. For details of the Hollywood Ghosts and Legends Walking Tour, find Dearly Departed Tours on Facebook, dearlydepartedtours.com, or call 1-855-600-DEAD.
Hi, this is Hollywood haunt writer Marla Brooks, and you're listening to the Para X Radio Network.
Rhett, where are you going?
I'm going back to the paranormal view, back where I belong.
Please, take me with you.
No, I'm through with everything here. I want to see if there's something left in life I haven't explored. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, Rhett, don't run to them. They talk about ghosts and hauntings, UFOs, and all kind of supernatural scary stuff.
You'll never understand, will you, Scarlet?
No!
Well, that's your misfortune.
Rhett, if you go, where shall I go? What shall I do?
Frankly, my dear, fine.
You've got to be kidding.
That's The Paranormal View with your host, Henry Foister, Jeffrey Gould, Kat Kloko, and Barbara Duncan, every Saturday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, exclusively on the Para-X Radio Network.
9 words women use. 1.
Fine.
This is the word women use to end an argument when they are right and you need to shut up. 2.
5 minutes.
If she is getting dressed, this means a half hour. 5 minutes is only 5 minutes if you have just been given 5 more minutes to watch the game before helping around the house. 3.
Nothing.
This is the calm before the storm. This means something and you should be on high alert. Arguments that begin with
nothing
usually end in
fine.
4.
Go ahead.
Warning, Will Robinson. This is a dare, not permission. Don't do it. 5. This is actually a word, but it is a nonverbal statement often misunderstood by men. A loud sigh means that she thinks you are an idiot and wonders why she is wasting her time standing here arguing with you about nothing. Refer back to number 3 for the meaning of nothing. 6.
That's okay.
This is one of the most dangerous statements a woman can make to a man.
That's okay.
Means that she wants to think long and hard before deciding how and when you will pay for your mistake. 7.
Thanks.
A woman is thanking you. Do not question or faint. Just say, you're welcome. Be careful. This is true unless she says,
thanks a lot.
That is pure sarcasm and she is not thanking you at all. Do not say you're welcome if she says,
thanks a lot.
Or that will bring on,
whatever.
8.
Whatever.
This is the woman's way of saying,
fuck you.
9.
Don't worry about it. I got it.
Another dangerous statement, meaning this is something that a woman has told a man to do several times, but is now doing it herself. This will later result in a man asking, what's wrong? For the woman's response, refer to number 3. And that is just 9 words women like to use.
Hi, I am John Zaffis, and you are listening to Paranormal View on the Para-X Radio Network.
There's a darkness in the hallway. Voices that seem to come from nowhere. Alone at night, there is a feeling that something or someone is near. Where can you go? Who can you turn to? Para-X Radio and the all-new Para-X Vision can help. Our knowledgeable host and expert guest can help you find some answers and take a glimpse into the unknown. Para-X Radio and Para-X Vision, programming for the open mind.
Para-X Radio presents Real Persons of Genius.
Real Persons of Genius.
Today, we salute you, Mr. and Mrs. Para-X show host.
Mr. and Mrs. Para-X show host.
Armed with nothing more than a laptop and a microphone, you hit the air to scare the bejesus out of your audience.
What the hell was that noise?
Like a dog peeing on a fire hydrant, you always whet our appetite for more.
I just can't get enough.
Whether it's witches, ghosts, fairies, or Bigfoot, we admire your ability to set aside reality and believe anything, anyone, tells you.
Seek professional help.
So the next time you're kneeling in front of your 8x10 glossy of Dave and Tom lighting a candle, remember, if it wasn't for you, I might be able to sleep without the lights on.
Mr. and Mrs. Para-X Soho.
Para-X Radio Network, powered by CBS.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
And welcome back, everybody, to the Paranormal View right here on the Para-X Radio Network. I want to thank everybody for being here tonight. Chat room's filling up real nice, and those listening from around the world, we appreciate you also. Remember, if you do have questions, you can private chat them to either Ceiling Cat or myself, and we will get those questions right over to our guest. And yes. Barbara, where do we have listeners
Henry,
at tonight?
We got listeners in the United States, Canada, France, and welcome Switzerland, and Belgium.
All right. Welcome. Hope you guys enjoy the show tonight. And thank you for taking the time to drop by and listen to our show. And I want to bring back Linda Godfrey. I hope she didn't get lost somewhere.
No, I managed to climb back out of the subterranean chambers of my castle. make my way back to the pit that is my office here.
Now, before we get started on talking about the Jersey Devil, Pat wanted to come on and be able to talk with you about the Jersey Devil. So I'm going to go ahead and bring him in, and he'll be able to also help us, or, you know, ask you questions and stuff about the Jersey Devil, because they have been looking for it, I don't know for how long. So
One of the things I love about Wisconsin, because I grew up in Iowa, and Northeast Iowa, Southwest Wisconsin, we have the river there, and you have the glacial carve-outs that form a lot of the rivers up there. There's an awful lot of places to hide. You would think that there's going to be probably more of a variety of creatures there, because they can pretty much go unseen for years, decades.
Sure, right. Yeah, and I have had sightings of what I call a man bat over there in La Crosse, right on the river, in that area. And there have been large bird sightings along, all up and down that that river with the cliffs. People don't understand that the immensity of these cliffs along the Wisconsin River as it wends its way up toward Canada, and kind of forms the border between Wisconsin and Minnesota. So,
even through the Mississippi River going down, the cliffs can be rather large.
Right, right. And it gives things with large wings really nice updrafts that can help them soar around. And so there's everything from a really nice returning bald eagle population to things that are more unknown in that same area.
Now we got Patrick with us. Pat?
Hey, Henry, how you doing?
I'm doing just fine. How you doing?
Doing great. Having a good time listening to the show.
Well, I appreciate it. I tried to call Doug in, but apparently the one that he was on with wasn't working. So I guess it's just you for the time being. So,
all right. I'll see what I can do. But no, Linda, I've been enjoying listening to you. Among other things, we've been hunting the Jersey Devil. But I also had my own Bigfoot experience a long time ago up in Canada.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, and I was interested because when we told the story to the local French Canadians who were the caretakers on this lake, they basically said, I won't be going fishing up in that lake anymore. They basically accept it as a way of life.
Right.
And they avoid it. They don't want to make contact. They don't want to have a confrontation, they let it go. They let you know, which I found fascinating, that he validated. Like, if I told somebody in the United States, okay, yeah, well, were you drinking, you know? But right there, they completely accept that this is part of everyday life.
Right.
And it was not unusual at all that I was telling this story. It was unusual to me.
Yeah.
But sure. Yes. So I love that about those people.
Well, I think that may be a much more sane way to approach creatures like Bigfoot. I've had my own encounter, and I know firsthand what a tremendous amount of strength and power they have. And imagine what they could do if they really were upset with you and could probably catch up to you in no time. So, yeah, I think that they are not big teddy bears out in some park, you know, and that people really need to respect them. And, and the same thing with the upright canines. You know, people will say, well, how should I act? Should I be scared of them? And I always say, you should treat any large, furry, unknown predator, especially if it's bigger than you, with the utmost respect, because
yes,
we don't know for sure what they are or what they can do. We can suspect, you know, but
absolutely no. I agree with you. They should be respected and not approached. You know, if you see something or you get close to something like that, don't go further. You know, the most of the stuff that happens and what happened to us was a warning, and I realized how strong they are. Like you said.
Mm-hmm.
We had first of all, to set this up, we had flown from a village 250 miles inland to a lake in a reservation with only five cabins on it, one of them the caretaker's cabin.
What part of Canada was this?
This is in Quebec.
We okay.
were in yeah, so we're in a place where there's no roads, no place to get to. And to make it even harder, because there's so many lakes up there, one day we all said, hey, wonder if we can get a boat over to this other lake. And, you know, we could have some fun fishing on that lake. And there was a small lake that might have had some lake trout. So we wind up carrying a boat about a mile through the woods, two of the boats and motors. And we're on this private lake no one's been to in a long time. And we're having a good time fishing.
Mm-hmm.
We get over near a cliff. On the one side of the lake, there was a large hill. And it gradually went up, and then there was a cliff. So the cliff was back about 40 yards, 50 yards.
Mm-hmm.
We're in the water, and we kind of drifted over that area. And we're really paying attention to fishing. And suddenly I heard a loud splash behind me in the water.
Uh-oh.
My first instinct was, it's the character I'm with in the boat who's, you know, he's a character and he's got a rock and he just did something. So while we're arguing, I'm convinced it's him, and I'm telling him, you know, what are you doing this for? I'm trying to fish. At that moment, another rock hits, and we both actually are able to watch this one go into the water not too far from us. So that was a bit of a concern, because it came from that hill we were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And would have come 40 or 50 yards and would have been big enough that, you know, a normal person would have to have two hands probably just to pick it up.
Wow. Yeah, and imagine that. Here's the other thing. Really, nothing that's out there in the wild has an arm structure that is able to hurl something in that way.
Right.
And the opposable thumb that you need to hold onto it and then fling it. So, this is such a typical sort of get out of my business reply that people get from these creatures. And it actually happened to me this past fall. To my colleague that I was with, he and I were exploring a part of the Southern Kettle Moraine Forest where I'd had reports, and I was pretty sure, you know, that there were at least one living very near in there. And so we had walked in maybe a couple of miles into this, the terrain kind of varies between these tall piney woods and then deciduous forests, and there are these deep things cut by the glacier that are like bowl-shaped depressions. That's why they call it the Kettle Moraine. They look like kettles. And we were feeling that something was out there. We'd hear something. We were making tree knocks and not getting any response. And I said, well, let's just try shaking this little tree, not enough to hurt the tree or anything, but you know, that's what primates do. And so I tried shaking the tree and nothing really happened. And then my colleague, Jay Bachochin, who's I'm about 5'1", he's like 6'1", you know, much stronger. He was really able to make that tree shake. And all of us, and I was just watching this area to his left, where there was kind of an open area and then some woods behind it. And I thought, if anything throws anything, I'm going to see it. Well, all of a sudden, he got clunked in the head with something really heavy. It gave him a concussion. He literally had a concussion from it.
Wow.
Yeah, and I have a friend who spent a childhood around a Bigfoot clan. She's a Native American woman in Maine. And she said, you know, usually they don't hit you with the rock. The rocks fall around you as a warning. If it hit him in the head with a rock, it intended to kill him.
Right, right. Otherwise, they most of the time it's just a warning, get away.
Right.
I've never heard of anyone actually getting struck.
Yeah, and if it had been a human, I would have seen it, because a human would have had to have been close enough to throw it that accurately.
Right.
Whatever this was bigger and more accurate, more pinpoint accuracy, and was able to hide itself behind the foliage well enough while throwing it. So, and that was just, you know, this past fall, as I said. So,
well, here's an interesting thing. Before this happened, we actually, because the lake we were in was kind of a bowl shape as well, we were hearing the sound of what I can only describe as like 10,000 flies on a carcass.
Hmm.
And it was up on the hill. So we had heard this prior, and we're thinking, well, there's probably a dead moose up there. And, you know, it's a couple days in, and there's a bunch of insects of all kinds, and maybe that's just the sound. Well, the interesting thing is, as we talked about it, the sound moved along the ridge, so it wasn't stationary.
Oh.
And it moved down to the other part of the ridge and was gone for a while. Then it came back right before the rocks were thrown. Mm-hmm. And now, like I said, there was another boat with us, but we could see them at the time. Mm-hmm. They were further up the lake, and so we knew it wasn't them. And then later, when we got back to the cabin, we told them what happened. And they told us that a little while after that, they also had rocks thrown near them.
Really?
Yeah. So, like you said, it's a warning most of the time, and that's what we were getting. And we eventually got out of there. So the Canadians were definitely not going back to that lake anymore.
Let me
that's
ask
for
you
sure.
Both. Don't you think that if they are hunters, that would be the primary way they're going to bring down anything? Like we would use a crossbow or a gun, they're probably very accurate with those rocks, and that's probably how they're getting their game.
Wow, good point.
Yeah, I read that somewhere just recently. I'm not sure. It's some book I've got around here. No, you should see my office. It's this massive pile. When I'm working on a book, I have this like fortress of book piles around me. And where I'm working, so I can't remember which one it was, but I did just read that last week. That is a lot of people who encounter them out in the wilds have surmised that that's how they bring down their game. You know, is by pegging it with a rock. And if they could hit my friend in the head hard enough that through his cap, even he got a concussion. I mean, he was just like loony. He dropped me off, and he couldn't remember how to get out of my neighborhood. It was that bad. But you might be interested, the book that I'm working on now, I've got some new unpublished Bigfoot stories, and one is very similar to what you just described, but it happened in the Forest Preserve area east of O'Hare Airport, just right in the Chicago area. And it was a couple decades ago, but this guy was taking a bike ride along the river trails. And there's actually quite a stretch of forest preserve that strangely hooks up to other corridors where it could get around from a bigger forest area and then use these this roundabout way to get through if it was trying to go somewhere. Well, he was there like at sunrise, so he had the whole place to himself. It wasn't, the trails weren't busy or anything. And he decided to sit down on a log behind a bunch of goldenrod weeds, or ragweeds it was, excuse me, ragweeds, and just watch the sun coming up on the river. It was very pretty, and he was very entranced. And as he did that, he noticed this huge, tall, dark creature silhouetted against the sun through the trees on the other side of the river, which was maybe about 50, 60 feet away. It wasn't a long ways away. And he watched this thing walk down to the riverbank, and it pulled kind of leisurely on a vine. And he said he sat and watched it probably for 5-10 minutes, just transfixed. And then all of a sudden, the ragweed got to him. And he was just trying so hard to stifle it, but he couldn't. He just kind of like sneezed, coughed, you know, when you're trying to keep the sneeze down. And the thing immediately looked up and started looking for him. And so he was terrified. He took his bike and he hunched over and crept along the trail till he was a little farther along where there again was some cover and he could look and see where the river was. And what he saw was, all in that time, in those few minutes, the creature had somehow gotten across the river completely silently and was in the process of picking up large flat river rocks from the bottom of the river and heaving them over its head, chucking them at the space where this guy had just been sitting just before he moved.
Oh boy.
And so then he's like, oh no, now I'm in for it. And wouldn't you know, of course, the ragweed got him again. And he had to cough, and the thing was immediately turned around, staring at him from about 30 feet away. And he said this time it reached down to the bank and was picking up smaller rocks that were right there and started pitching them at him overhand like a baseball pitcher. And it hit his bicycle. One of them hit his bicycle. He had his forearm up in front of his face trying to protect his head, and one hit his arm, and he started running down the path, and it chased him about halfway back to the parking lot, he said.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, I got Doug on, and I'm fixing to call in Jeff. I wanted to get him in before we actually go ahead and talk about the Jersey Devil. So, because when I try to call Jeff, it's going to, you'll hear a ringing because I'm calling his phone, not the guy. At least I think he's on here somewhere.
Hello, everybody.
Howdy.
Hello.
Hi, Linda. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too, Jeff.
This is Doug.
That's Doug.
Oh, that's
I'm Doug.
So okay. Yep. It sounds like we are getting reports now of this, not only it used to be shy and trying to avoid humans, that when they're coming across them now, they're being very confrontational.
Well, you know, to me, it seems a lot like the same story that they're having with other animals that find out humans have good garbage and that they're into human habitations and they lose their fear of humans.
Yep.
So doing that, bears are doing that. At first you only heard that about
Thank
the garbage.
Thank you for calling. At the tone, slowly, loudly, and clearly, please take your full name, full telephone number with area code and detailed message. If you're responding to the ad, please state and fill out your email address.
If you can name tonight's movie, you win $100.
See, this is Bigfoot. Quit talking about me. Yeah.
I didn't know Bigfoot had an answering service.
Oh, my God, Jeffrey.
If you're leaving a message for Yeti, press 2.
Yeah. For Dogman, press 3.
For English,
it's
press 4.
Mothman, hang up and call back later.
I'm sorry, you reached my refrigerator. Please leave a message.
Let me tip Ray.
And Henry goes, Jeffrey goes, what?
So they, okay, they now, are getting more aggressive.
Now,
yeah?
Some, I would say from what I've been hearing, yes, they are.
Yeah, it seems to be that losing the fear of humans, and maybe they're sort of desperate to stake out the last places they have to be, you know. And it does seem to me, I've wondered this myself, it seems like there are lots more sightings than there used to be. Maybe that's only because there are more people aware of it. There are more people out there hiking and trying to see them. But it also makes me wonder if, you know, maybe their population is increasing. And I do believe that the Bigfoots are more numerous than the upright canines based on percentages of sightings. There are lots more Bigfoot sightings than there are of the upright canines. And maybe they are growing in population.
Well, another thing you got to take into consideration also, like here in Jersey, with all the building going on, we're more or less moving into their territory. So I think that would be the reason for a lot more sightings as well.
Sure, yeah. The more you interact, the more you have these encounters.
Pick up the phone, Jeffrey.
Dialing for dollars again.
he said last time it wasn't showing that it was ringing. So I don't know. Maybe he's got his phone turned off or something.
Oh.
If he can name the drinking word, he wins $100.
Name that tune.
Spelled his name wrong. Oops.
Okay.
Well, somebody was mentioning dragons. If I could for a second, I want to bring this up because I was in Italy in October, and we went to Venice. And the two columns that in San Marcos Plaza, one of the columns is of St. Theodore with his foot on, depending who you ask, a dragon or a crocodile. I tend to look at the dragon thing, and as a lot of myths have some base in fact, I took some. I was able to take. They have one at the palace that's a copy of that, and I was able to take a picture of that and look at it later. And if this was indeed a dragon, and let's say at that time, you know, they did exist, or they were just, you know, dying out. it's interesting to note that you look at the picture, it doesn't look anything like a crocodile. It has a head more similar to the Jersey Devil. And if they were being accurate at all, the body is tapered and almost aerodynamic. And the wings resemble what you hear from Mothman and creatures like that. So I'm just wondering if dragons weren't indeed some kind of form of Jersey Devil, Mothman, creature like that. What do you think about that being misidentified possibly?
Well, yeah, it becomes very hard to sort out between a dragon, a Jersey Devil, a man bat, a bat squatch, you know, all these different weird flying things. I tend to lump them under the title American gargoyles, but it's not just American, it's worldwide. But when you go back far enough into any culture worldwide, you're going to find dragons, usually deified as some sort of god. For instance, the Chinese had dragons that were bringers of civilization. They were very benevolent. They had different colors. They came from different parts of the sky. And they were worshipped, more or less. You know, in Mesoamerica, you had Quetzalcoatl, who showed up in different civilizations, the Mayans and the Aztecs, with different names. They all seemed to have their version of him. And this, again, was a feathered flying serpent. You know, it's always this combination of the reptile and the wings of some sort. It's a flying reptile.
Right.
And, you know, and you go to the Native Americans and they've got the Thunderbird. You go to, you know, so much of the ancient European lore includes dragons and very ancient creatures. You've got In the Bible, the serpent, you know, that had other attributes and was obviously more than just a, you know, your common garden snake. So all of these cultures across the world venerate the flying serpent or dragon in their ancient legends. And it just makes you wonder what gave them that idea. You know, is it some that dinosaurs were supposed to have died out way before humans came along? You know, that's under debate in some areas. Some people think we still have some dinosaurs today. And you have these things seen that look like pterosaurs, pterodactyl-type birds, where they've got the leathery skin, the bat-like wings, the aerodynamic bodies. And some people think those are being mistaken for dragons. But that they don't explain the myths and legends about bringing the civilization and having the big part to play, you know, in human development that you get from all of these ancient culture stories.
Wow, but they are woven through just about every, like you said, culture on the planet.
Right.
All of them have something similar. And I'm just wondering, you know, are those part of the ancient, you know, chariot of the gods? Were they indeed aliens that looked like serpents, and that's why they're deified at some point?
Yeah, the interesting thing is that in just about every culture, Quetzalcoatl did this, the Chinese dragons did this. They bring civilization and farming and instruct people in how to do all these things. And even the serpent in the Bible, things changed in a big way for Adam and Eve when they encountered this serpent that they had to begin making clothing for themselves and building houses and, you know, populating the earth in a different way. So it all kind of makes me wonder whether there was something there, somebody there, entities of a certain type there that were very active in our ancient prehistory and that became memorialized. You go back to the ancient Egyptians and just the idea of the Sphinx, this, you know, winged cat-like creature, or they had the alligators, that they had the alligator gods and others too, back to Sumeria. The same creatures you see over and over again. Where did they come from? Why did everybody think of the same exact weird animal-like thing that brought the earth good things?
Right, exactly. And like you said, the Egyptians, the Sphinx, they now believe the original head was probably a dog's head. If you look at the body, it's not the body of a lion. It's more like the body of a dog.
Right,
and of course,
exactly. Yeah.
The big dog god Anubis was key in their culture.
And now they're finding really very, very large tombs underneath the Sphinx, are very large boulders.
Yeah, there's a lot of digging. Yeah, it's amazing how much the archaeologists are finding just recently in Egypt. It's like all this stuff is coming to light. And the Anubis was the guide to the underworld. And interestingly, a fair number of upright canine witnesses will say that it reminded them of Anubis because of the upright pointed ears and the long muzzle and often a dark color.
Oh.
Which is very creepy if you think about it. But I've heard witness after witness say that. So who knows what that connection is.
Right. Are they related? Could that possibly be the same alien type of creature that was here, you know, for the Egyptians, and maybe we're seeing that now?
Who knows? You know, I don't feel qualified to speculate on that, but I just like to point out the interesting connections and say, you know, how come we have it here, 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 and here? And even in contemporary times, these dragon-like creatures and the Anubis-like creatures are still being seen.
Now, what about the fire-breathing aspect of it? Could that possibly be, I mean, because obviously, physiologically, it's not possible to breathe fire.
I thought about that, Barb. I think the fire-breathing part was If anyone ran into these things, they were so ferocious and so aggressive that after a while, it's like, don't go near that thing. You know, it literally breathes fire, you know? So I think that was kind of just an embellishment.
I think it was a myth.
Well, no, there's an embellishment on if they had any kind of interaction with an aggressive creature, they'd be telling their people, don't go near this thing. It's bad news. And then you know how people add to the story? Eventually it's like, oh, yeah, it's so bad, it breathes fire. Right. Yeah.
Well, there's another possibility. There's a researcher named Jonathan Whitcomb who has gone in search of the living, what he calls the living pterosaurs, and has been on expeditions to New Guinea where they've been spotted. And the interesting thing about them is that when people see these things at night, they seem to glow. They have a glow about them. And they think that they are possibly bioluminescent creatures. And bioluminescence is a chemical reaction that a lot of sea creatures have, and insects, you know, fireflies, that sort of thing. And they think that perhaps these living, he calls them ropen, there are different names for them, but they generally look pretty much like the class of pterosaurs that is supposed to be extinct, very large sized, and they glow very brightly at night. And I even actually had a report of a dog man that glowed so brightly that the person who saw it thought at first it was an ATV coming through the woods. And that doesn't really make sense. Canines shouldn't be able to glow bodily all over their body. When it comes to a bird that's extinct and we really don't have one to study its skin, we can't say for sure. Maybe it did have some reason to be bioluminescent, but who knows if it was something that was like these ropen and did have a bright bioluminescence, and people looking at it would think that, well, it must have fire in its belly because it's glowing. You know, why else would we be able to see it glow? So that's perhaps far-fetched, but it's not like it's without biological precedent.
Not at all, when you consider there are caves. I think there was an algae that washed up on, I can't remember what shore now, with a bioluminescent algae that just covered the entire shore.
Right, right.
There's probably caves that we don't know about that contain that same bioluminescent algae.
Yeah, you can go and swim. Well, you can't swim in them anymore, but you can still take boat rides down in Central America, I think around Belize. I'm trying to remember the exact spot, but I have my friend Chad Lewis, who would be a great person to have on your show, by the way, has been down there and investigated them, and they're filled with these bioluminescent little organisms that make it look like a big glowing lake, that the lake is actually lit with blue fire.
The jellyfish here on the Jersey Shore have a green glow to them.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
If you're walking through the water or something like that, you can actually see them because they start turning green. Or if a wave comes in, the wave actually turns green.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's a process that can happen, you know. So I think that's one thing. Maybe there were these winged serpent-like creatures that had a bioluminescence. Or some people, now, this isn't my idea, I've heard it elsewhere, have thought that perhaps they were representations of flying vehicles from somewhere else that had lights, that appeared hard-surfaced like scales on a reptile, and because they flew, they were represented with wings.
Oh, yeah, okay. Sure.
So
makes sense, huh?
Yeah, I've seen that represented, I'm sure, on, you know, the Ancient Aliens show somewhere, and a couple of different people have written about that idea.
Wow. A real-life dragon.
Yeah, I think what we're going to do is go ahead and take a break. Our last one.
No, let's keep calling Jeff. It's really making him mad, so.
His phone's not working. He said tries to answer it, and it just doesn't work.
The button to the left, Jeffrey.
Yes.
Sorry, Jeff. Ghost soldiers hijacked your position tonight.
But when we come back, we'll quickly talk about the Jersey Devil. Since I've got 5 pages of questions here.
Oh, wow.
On all the other stuff.
I know,
there's
a lot of cryptos out there.
So I would say she'd come back next week, but we have another guest already. So anyway, we're going to go ahead and take a break, and I'm going to let CC take us out, and then I will bring us back about 5 minutes or so.
Well, alrighty then, folks, you're listening to The Paranormal View here on Para-X Radio with our wonderful guest, Linda Godfrey, your host, Henry Foister, Barbara Duncan, our special co-host tonight, Pat and Doug, the Gulf Soldiers. We'll be right back. We'll be right back after a brief intermission.
Killing me.
So, you had a lucid dream about Kansas teaching.
Oh my God.
And you're wondering what it means. We can actually help. We are the School of Metaphysics, a 40-year-old international resource for people who have questions. Big, juicy, deep questions about life and death and everything in between. 16 branches in the U.S., self-guided study online, weekend courses, webinars, and books. Send us a telepathic fax or visit our website, www.som.org. This could be the start of something really interesting.
Marla's Sacred Cauldron. This is the legendary artifact that has been whispered about in hushed tones for hundreds of years, and now it's mine! All mine!
Who dares defile the sanctity of my castle walls? Step away from the cauldron, you impertinent, muddy metal maltworm.
Never! I've spent half my lifetime trying to discover your age-old secret of stirring the cauldron!
Oh, for Merlin's sake, that's no deep, dark secret. Just tune into the Para-X Radio Network Thursday nights at 9 o'clock Eastern for more cauldron stirring than you can shake a wand at.
Oh, well, in that case, I guess I don't need to take up any more of your time, so I guess I'll be going.
Not just yet. We've got a little unfinished business to take care of.
That's Stirring the Cauldron with Marla Brooks every Thursday night at 9 p.m. Eastern on the Para-X Radio Network.
You know, there's nothing like a great memory of a great time. And if you grew up during the 1950s, 60s, 70s, or 80s, boy, have we got the memories for you. There was no time more innocent than the 1950s or 60s, nor was there a time more politically explosive. Hi, this is Steve Shockley, a.k.a. The Shock. Join me live every Friday and Saturday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern for a Baby Boomer Rock with a Shock sock hop on rockwithashockradio.com.
Ghost Hunters Case Log 451. The time? Thursday, 8 p.m. Okay, we're going to start an EVP session. Is there anyone out there? Can you repeat that? I really need you to try to project louder and slower so we can all hear.
The Black Cat Lounge.
That's right, gang. Listen in, the Black Cat Lounge, every Thursday night, 8 o'clock, on Para-X.
They're creepy and they're kooky, mysterious and spooky. They all talk gobbledygooky, the Para-X family. The shows are paranormal, not stuffy but informal. The topics are abnormal, the Para-X family.
They're strange.
deranged. Unrestrained.
So grab your favorite brew. It's time to rendezvous as we give awards to the Para-X family.
And welcome back, everybody, to the Paranormal View right here on the Para-X Radio Network. I want to thank everybody for being with us tonight. We got with us, of course, Barbara Duncan. And we got Doug and Pat from the Ghost Soldiers.
Hello.
And we have with us our special guest.
I'm here.
Godfrey.
Hello.
And unfortunately, we're having problems trying to get Jeff into chat. So we will work on that after the show, after we're off the air, and see if we can't figure out what the problem is with his phone. Maybe he hasn't paid his bill.
Oh, let's call him one more time, Henry. Come on.
Yeah, one more time, Henry.
No, it's not working. It's not. It's some reason or another. It's just not picking up. So with that, we were talking or going to talk about Mothman because Doug and Pat both have investigated Mothman, and Linda has written about the Mothman. So let's see what she's what they can tell about. Yeah, the Jersey Devil. What did I say? Mothman?
Yeah.
Oh. Well, it's one of them little creatures that fly around, you know.
They're all the same, right, Henry?
Yeah, they got wings. They fly. They come, they go, I guess, you know.
So what did your story say, Linda, about the Jersey Devil?
Well, it's kind of interesting because it fits the typical, what I call the American gargoyle. You know, it's often compared to a body like a kangaroo, but with these little bat wings. Originally, it had horns. Sometimes it, you know, its eyes glow and flash red. And you find variations of this all over the place. And the Jersey Devil has varied in its description, too, from different people. It's interesting to note that. But the general idea the public has of it, and my friends Mark Moran and Mark Skurin, who are the authors of Weird U.S. and Weird New Jersey, have done a lot of research on this. And they describe it as the tracks resembling the claw prints of a strange bird or the footprints made by a two-legged creature, a weird collection of animal parts that include the body of a kangaroo, the head of a dog, the face of a horse, large leathery wings, antlers like a deer, a forked reptilian tail, and intimidating claws. Now, you know, that's quite a creature. And the legend actually goes back to the early 1700s when there was supposed to have been a woman who found out she was pregnant and it was her 13th baby. The old man had left home. She was afraid she couldn't feed it. She cursed it. And so it was born a demon, and according to what version of the story that you read, it killed the whole family and ate some of them and ran out to the woods, or just ran out to the woods, where it lived and remained for centuries. And it was supposed to have made unearthly screeches, would sometimes go into inhabited areas and take a cow or scare travelers. And it was called the Phantom of the Pines. Well, then, it was considered just a legend, but then in 1909, hundreds of people started seeing this thing around New Jersey. It went into Haddon Heights. It was mid-January of 1909, and all the people on one city trolley saw the creature, and they described it as a kangaroo with wings. Now, pets started going missing. Farm animals were found mutilated and killed. And people started calling it a new version of the old Phantom of the Pines. They called it the Jersey Devil. People were getting panicked. Lawmen were trying to shoot at it with guns and with water hoses.
Right. Schools shut down. Businesses closed. Right.
It wasn't just like an occasional little sighting. It was like large numbers of people in various towns seeing it and encountering it. And it finally kind of went away. Maybe it got tired of being shot at and went back into the the woods, but it still is seen to this day. There was one that I was particularly impressed by in 1993, where a park ranger driving through Wharton State Forest in the evening actually saw on the road ahead of him what he called a large dark figure moving on the roadway. And this is a very seasoned patrolman. He thought it was a deer, but then when it stood upright, was covered in dark matted fur that looked shiny and wet, 6 feet tall, eyes glowed red, and it finally turned and walked into the brush on its hind legs. He didn't see any forelimbs, but then of course he didn't see, it was dark, you know, maybe they were there and he just didn't see him. It almost reminded me in some ways of a dog man, because some people will describe the dog man is the body reminding them of an upright deer. So who knows what it was, you know. And he said that its legs were strangely bent, much more muscular than those of a deer, and that also falls in line, you know, with the dog man description. So every once in a while it does pop up and somebody else sees something like it, but to me it falls very squarely into this category of what I call the American gargoyle, which is something with weird wings, kangaroo-like body, pointed head of some kind, and the red glowing eyes.
Right. Well, Mother Leeds was supposedly a witch. That's the woman who had the child, who was born, had the child. And it's interesting to note, it changes... The story changes a bit, but basically it's coming out of the Leeds area of New Jersey. Mm-hmm. And this thing was seen, like you said, in Philadelphia, up into Connecticut,
right,
and including some very powerful people like Commodore Stephen Decatur was testing cannonballs one day at a firing range and saw this creature flying across the sky. I think they even fired some shots at it. One of the shots hit it, but it kept flying across the sky like it didn't even affect it.
Right, and that same thing happens with Dogman and Bigfoot, I might add. People will shoot at it when they feel they're going to be eaten or something, and the bullets just bounce off, and they go off on the merry way. They seem to all have this sort of bulletproof skin that I don't understand, no matter whether it's the flying things or the other ones.
Sound like a tough hide.
But on the other hand, you get people or creatures like Mothman, which sort of fits in that category, but is also told to be around areas where there's going to be an accident or a major catastrophe of some sort.
Right. It's often thought that they do predict, you know, bad events. Mothman over in Point Pleasant was supposed to have predicted the fall of the Silver Bridge, which there were many deaths. It was a terrible...
It's like 4-6, I think.
Yeah, something like that. And the interesting thing is that the man bat, which was a humanoid with bat-like wings that almost flew into straight on into the windshield of a truck driven by a man and his son at night over near La Crosse in Wisconsin, occurred exactly three days before one of the mysterious drownings that have occurred there since the 1800s of young men just for no reason. Some of them, you know, are found with blood alcohol content extremely high, but they go into the river and drown. You know, there's never a sign of a struggle or any reason to know why they do it, and it's been going on since the 1800s. And that man bat appeared near the river 3 days before one of those drownings. However, it doesn't appear at every drowning, or at least nobody reports it. We don't know if it shows itself and somebody, you know, just doesn't want to go public with it. But there's another really fascinating creature very similar to these that most people don't know about and have never heard of. I think Monsters and Mysteries did an episode on it. It's called the Van Meter Visitor. It's in Van Meter, Iowa, and there's a really good book I recommend by my friends Chad Lewis, Noah Voss, and Kevin Nelson, who discovered it and went there and really did a great job of investigating it, I've got a couple pages on it in my American Monsters book, but they've got a whole book, you know, that really tells a lot about it and a lot of artwork and pictures. But this happened in 1903, which, if you think about it, was only 6 years before that big outbreak of the Jersey Devil and cross-country. Maybe it just took its time going from Iowa across to New Jersey, across the other right. state. But they discovered that something huge and bat-like had crawled out of an abandoned mine shaft, and it absolutely terrified the downtown of this little city, little village in Iowa. And very reputable citizens, the town physician saw it. It seemed to have a single light that shone out from its forehead, almost like reminded people of a miner's lamp, you know, that it would have on its that they would wear on their heads.
Sure.
It was described as half human, half animal. The doctor shot it, pumped 5 bullets into it point blank, and it seemed unaffected. So it also had that invincibility factor. It also appeared to a bank cashier who was looking for it, sitting in his bank armed with a shotgun, and saw the light, shot at it, thought he must have hit it, but when he went out, all he found was a large three-toed print in the dirt. And this kept up, and then when it finally left, just to make the story short, it released a putrid odor, by the way, which is another thing that people hear about. When it left, it flew out of a mine with another one flying with it. So evidently there had been a pair of them, which is kind of scary. And perhaps they headed for New Jersey.
Well, they might be there, because all of New Jersey is weird New Jersey. But no, we definitely think that there has to be something to this for the amount of people who have seen this. But what do you think about with this invincibility factor? It leads me to believe these may be an interdimensional creature.
Well, you know, it's really hard after 23 years of researching these things, and I know other investigators like John Keel and others have kind of come to the same conclusion. You run into so many impossibilities, so many ways that they act like something from another world, from a place where the physical laws are different, that you just have to start considering the possibility that they may not be entirely flesh and blood animals. And I know a number of Native Americans that I've from different tribes that I've interviewed, some of them were elders, have told me basically the same thing, which is that they believe these creatures, Bigfoot, the Dogman, and probably some of the flying ones too, are actually spirit creatures at heart, that they come from somewhere else that they call the spirit world. Maybe we would call it another dimension or another world,
right?
A parallel world. That but they know where the doors are to come here. Maybe we would call those portals or vortexes or something like that. And when they want to go back, they can. They know how to get back to where they were, and that's why they're invisible. They don't, perhaps their bodies aren't joined in the same molecular way that ours are. If you know anything at all about physics, you know that we're all made of atoms with comparatively large spaces between them, and the atoms are, when you break everything down, you get down to little vibrating string-like particles, which is where they get the name string theory. Well, perhaps in our world of physics, we vibrate at a different rate than something that's in another parallel world. Yeah. Our foremost physicists right now are saying that for all the formulas to work that Einstein and everyone else came up with, theory of relativity and things that bear out themselves in every other way, there have to be more than one dimension. And what they're arguing about now is the nature and number of those dimensions. There have to be at least 11, for reasons I won't get into. But one of the latest ideas is that we have something called parallel worlds, where there's world after world after world stacked up like pancakes into infinity, for almost every action that occurs, whatever didn't happen here happened in that one.
Oh, yeah.
For every world where you know, Henry Douglas, Barbara, and myself are sitting and talking at a computer, there's a world where, let's say, Joss Whedon and Dolly Parton and any other two people that you can think of, you know, might be sitting around a campfire that transmits in some other, you know, I'm just wildly speculating. I'm just saying that there are, maybe the difference wouldn't be that big. Maybe it would be Henry, Douglas, Barbara, and you'd be talking to, say, Lauren Coleman tonight.
No, I definitely,
you know,
agree with what. Yeah, I agree with what you're saying about the dimensions, and I definitely think that there are more than one. And what these creatures are doing, really, I'm thinking now, is no different than the spirits that we encounter as paranormal investigators, coming into this world unseen, having some fun, and then going back.
Right. And, you know, people say, oh, well, I can't think about all that. But many people, if you ask them if they believe in the Bible, they'll say, well, sure, I believe in the Bible. Well, the Bible is about spirits and spiritual worlds and other places, places below us and above us. Perhaps that's metaphorical, but that's how they're described. Creatures like angels, creatures like giants, the prince of the air that we're supposed to avoid, beings that prowl around looking for us, like prowling lions that prey on us.
Right.
You know, demons of all different types that are able to inhabit people. Even Jesus talked about, mentioned ghosts. You know, his disciples didn't believe it was him when he came back, and he said, look, a ghost doesn't have flesh that I have, and he ate a fish to prove that, you know, while he was here, he was solid and physical. So yep. It's not like there aren't other reasons and precedents to believe that there's more beyond this physical reality, more than what we can sense with our five limited senses. And I mean, I just read some forum or someplace where somebody wrote in and was saying the usual, if I can't hear it, see it, or smell it, it doesn't exist. I don't believe it. But yet, can you hear a dog whistle? No, but we know the dog whistle exists. Can you see the ultraviolet spectrum of light? Can you see beyond our normal eyeball range that we poor limited humans have in our eyesight? No, we know there are colors and lights beyond our ability. So, you know, it's just kind of ignorant to think that what we can see with our limited senses is all there is.
Well, and one of my favorite quotes is, if the doors of perceptions were cleansed, man would see everything as it really is, infinite. Mm-hmm. You know, which is true, because the possibilities are so infinite. And, you know, as a paranormal investigator, I learn that on a daily basis. And what I thought was true last week may not be true next week. Mm-hmm. And so you have to kind of just know that everything's evolving and changing. And there's a lot of stuff going on out there that we just don't realize all the time.
I agree. And that's one reason I wrote American Monsters, because I just wanted people to see that there are so many reports of things we don't understand that appear to be right here with us. They may not stay here with us. They may do things that we don't understand or that look physically impossible to us, but they're not hallucinations. You know, hallucinations are very different things, and they're often seen by more than one person at a time.
Right.
You know? And they make noises, they leave footprints, they do things that convince us of their physicality while they're here, but we know in our hearts they're not the same things as dogs, cats, bears, us, you know, just flesh and blood creatures as we know them.
Yeah, there's just so much out there that's not seen on a daily basis. We really have to question everything that we were taught as kids, and, you know, what not to believe, because, you know, those monsters that are in your closet that aren't supposed to be there, well, they're there. I mean, you know, call them what you want. They're not exactly monsters in all cases, but there's, you know, you have to wonder now, going back at childhood, And I had an incident when I was like 7 or 8. And this happened right after I had a bad fall. I was up in a tree, fell about 30 feet. I was in a coma for 3 days, came out of the coma. When I went back to my house, I was in my bedroom, and I look out the window and I see something standing there looking at me with bright glowing eyes. And this is the only, I had never seen this before. And my window was about 6.5 feet above the ground. So if there was something there, it was pretty tall. And of course I called my mom in, and whatever it was ran or, turned and went left, and I didn't see it again, but I knew something existed in those woods, whether it was physical or spiritual. There was some kind of creature there, and I always knew it, and I kind of gave it respect after that. And I never had any trouble with it, but who knows what that was. And I really wouldn't have put that together unless I've had all these experiences up till this point and realized you've got to rethink everything.
And this is in New Jersey, Pat?
Yeah. Actually, I grew up in Pennsylvania. Yeah, in the Pocono Mountains, where that guy was able to elude the police for a long time. So, vast
place. Because it brings me to another crypto creature, which I find fascinating, up in that neck of the woods, which would be the Puckwudgies, which are also known for pushing people off cliffs.
Oh.
Yeah, the little people, the American little people. Yeah, they can be, talk about respect. They're ones that, from everything that I've read, people for going back centuries have seen them and try their utmost to pay them respect, because if you don't, then they turn against you and become mischievous and push you off cliffs or, do other bad things to you. Whereas they can be beneficial too, and I don't know if they're any different than they sound very much like the elves and the imps and the, fairy folk of European lore. But just about every culture, again, has its tales of a little tiny people that aren't exactly people. Even though, and they're different than even the Hobbit people, that were found a couple of years ago, the so-called Hobbit people, because they were very tiny yet believed to be fully human. The Puckwudgie and other things are like it, are said to be able to disappear and, have certain special powers. They're not just natural creatures.
Which goes back to the trans-dimensional aspect of this, which there's a lot of people saying they can disappear, phase out, phase in, even possibly possess somebody. I don't think that, are there any other cryptos that you're aware of that can possess humans?
That it's a good question, and it's the one that you hear as most mentally invasive, and I don't know if it's the same thing as possessing exactly, but I'm leaving out ghosts and spirits and that kind of thing, because of course you've heard of spirit channeling and that kind of thing, but you get into the aliens and the reptilians and that sort of thing. People do say that, and I've heard this about both Bigfoot and the upright canine, that they quote unquote get into your head and that they can send you messages, perhaps not in words or English, but so that you have understandings from, kind of emotional content, and I've heard that from people. I haven't experienced it, but I've heard it from a number of people, and there are other researchers who will insist that no, that doesn't happen. They don't go invisible. They're not invincible. None of this is true, especially with the Bigfoot, that they're just natural, normal animals that are undiscovered, and I respect that view too, because there's a lot of evidence for that with those creatures and the Dogman, and I honestly don't know which one is right. I just try to remain open to the different possibilities.
Now,
go ahead, Henry. I'm sorry.
Our time is running on out quickly, and before it does, I got one question that we need to ask, because I know Barbara was talking about it also. And you talk about dragons. And one of the stories you had is the Ohio Highway Dragon. I've never heard of it.
Well, yeah, not all of these things that are in the book are real known, you know, famous monsters. And some of them just kind of get tagged with a name. And, you know, and I'm kind of trying to think exactly which one. This was the one, I believe, where a woman was driving along in Ohio. And Ohio, by the way, is a state with a very high quotient of weirdness. You know, if it's weird and it's a cryptozoological thing, it will be in Ohio. You know, they've got the flying manta rays, which is another weird thing that I don't understand. They've got the Bigfoot, the Dogman, the Thunderbirds, the pterosaurs, you name it, they're all there.
But they got Henry.
But this one happened in, this was a woman who wrote me in October 2011, so that's, it hasn't been published before this, the story in this book. And she wrote that it happened to her in 2008 or 2009. She's driving between Mount Vernon and Martinsburg on State Route 586, and she comes around a curve, and less than half a mile away, she sees this dark-colored figure that she describes as a massive winged bird on the right side of the road. She said it was at least one half mile ahead of me, and it was the largest animal I've ever seen. All I could think was dragon. No eagle could reach this size. And as she drove along with her eyes on it, hoping to see it better, but it disappeared back into the trees. And she described it, you know, I always try to interview people and get more of a description. And she said it arched up its back, like the way you see pictures of dragons, with the wings outstretched, the wings moving slowly down, flapping. While it didn't, it flapped its wings just enough to stay at its location in the air, sort of hovering. And then when it moved back into the trees, it dropped a little and then swooped back in. And she said, I didn't see feathers. I was too far away. All I saw was darkness for coloring. And the sheer size of it blew her mind. And in her case, it could have been something else. You know, she wasn't close enough to get as good of a look at it as three people near Ocano Falls in Wisconsin did when they saw something flying at the height of the telephone pole wires with a street light shining on it that they could see its scales. But what she saw was huge, and it reminded her of a dragon. So that was how we tagged it.
And what part of Ohio was that in?
She said again it was between Mount Vernon and Martinsburg on State Route 586.
Okay.
So
let's go check that out. Hey,
Henry's going to go dragon then.
Take a drive, definitely.
Do they make a butterfly net big enough?
I think you might have to make your own.
Linda, I had a question I wanted to ask you. This is Doug from Jersey.
Hi.
Do you believe from your experience and your reading and your research that the Jersey Devil could be a seasonal thing, or is it an all-year-round thing?
Well, it seemed to come out in winter in the 1909 sighting. I think the other one with the park ranger was, I may be wrong, I'm not looking at it right now. It seemed like it was October or fall. I don't believe it was winter. So you get reports of it, you know, at different times of year. And I would expect that it would be, you know, whenever people are able to be out and about to observe it. I often think that has as much to do with when these things are seen, rather than, for instance, like people will say, well, is the dog man just seen under a full moon? And my reply is, I haven't been able to correlate it, but I do wonder if there aren't more people out and about when there's a full moon, because they can see, and it also increases their visibility. You know, and perhaps it's the same thing with the Jersey Devil. Maybe it's seen more in certain types of weather. Maybe it shows up better against the snow. You know, I don't know. I don't feel I have enough information on that one to really say, but I don't know why it wouldn't be year-round if it's there in things that are around in winter. You know, mammals usually stick around in the better weather, too.
Okay, because in my research and doing the mapping of it, doing my research and searching for it, Lee's Point and Oswego River and Lake fall in the same lines as Burlington County. And this spring is going to be one of the places we're going to start off for our investigation and, believe it or not, do a camp out. You with us, Henry?
Sounds fun.
I'm going to be lucky to make it over to Gettysburg with you guys.
Okay.
Now, Linda, I do have a good question, and for all of you, actually, who are into cryptozoology and study this for a long time, what would happen if you've come across one of these creatures? Would you trap it? Would you kill it? Or would you just know where it is, tag it, and come back and study it?
I wouldn't kill it unless it was about to kill me and I had something that I, you know, knew would work. I mean, I don't think you should kill something just because you don't know what it is, just to find out. I think that's wrong because think of the dog man. It could be, for all you know, a human in a fursuit. You might be the one person who's being hoaxed that year. It could be a wolf, which is an endangered species, that's just adapted as a certain subspecies, and then you're going to be fined a lot. Unless your own person or your pet or something is about to be killed, I don't think you have a right to kill it, even to find it out. Trapping it, I think, would be very problematic. It would be hard to really know how to build a trap because we don't know the animals, even for either for Bigfoot or any of the other cryptids. We don't know the animals well enough to know what would hold them, what would attract them, how to make them go in it. They seem very elusive. They're all able to elude cameras so that we can't get a great picture of them. So I don't know how you're going to get one in a trap. I would treat it with great respect. If it was possible to just safely dart one and take a few skin samples, you know, and release it, you know, that doesn't strike me as too horrible to do if you were able to do it. But again, actually managing to pull that off, I think, is the big problem. I'm not sure how you would do it, given their elusiveness and their ability to, you know, run away and disappear and their strength and that kind of thing. So
creature that can take a cannonball shot and keep moving, I don't think I want to mess with.
No.
Exactly. But if it were possible, you know, I wouldn't morally object to one being just, you know, darted and sampled as long as it wasn't hurt. We do that to bear and other things too. So
we just want some video or pictures or something like that. So,
right, a great video of, you know, several minutes with things in the background for context and comparison, and from all different views.
Yep.
In good light, that's all I want.
Exactly.
That's a tall order, but that would be super. You know, I think that would be my most preferred if it would ever be possible.
People have been hunting for this thing for over 200 years. There's mm-hmm. been sightings, this year I really want to focus on, you know, bringing that evidence to light, just like the Bigfoot and anything else that we have out there in the world, in the universe, just like UFOs. I want to be able to bring the hard evidence to light.
Right. That would be the ideal.
Wow. Well, have either of you two seen the Jersey Devil or any evidence of where it was at?
Well, I'll tell you what, Henry. Doug had a close call. We were in the Pine Barrens, which looks the same for hundreds of miles and is larger than the Grand Canyon for scale. And we're back on one of these roads in the middle of nowhere, and there are crisscrossing roads, and it's really easy to get lost. It's so cold back there, even in the summertime. Temperatures have been recorded in the 30s or 20s in the midsummer. And so we went back, and it was spring. It was cold on this one, and we were standing outside the truck. And I was actually doing an EVP session to see if I could get anything out there. And all of a sudden, we heard a loud noise in the trees next to us. And poor Doug jumped about half a mile. And what the hell's that? Ah! And I'm like, it's easy, Doug. It's a whippoorwill. It's like, what?
I never heard one before.
Yeah, if you've never heard these things, they can be a little scary when they're about 20 feet away. And it was loud, but I had heard one, so it wasn't too... But Doug, yeah, priceless.
Wow. So your answer is no, you really haven't seen anything, so...
No, Henry, we would tell you if we had anything even close, and so far, nothing.
Well, Pat and Doug, I want to thank you guys for taking time to come on and join us and talk with Linda about these Mothman and whatever other thing it is you're looking for.
Oh, our pleasure. Thank you, Henry. Thank you, Linda.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Linda.
It was a pleasure. It was a lot of fun.
And why don't you guys give your websites out real quick, like?
All right. You can check us out at theghostsoldiers.com. Our Twitter handle is info@ghostsoldiers1. Or I'm sorry, that's our email, info@ghostsoldiers.tv. And our Twitter handle is @ghostsoldiers1. And check us out on Facebook.
There you go. And you have some of your videos up on your site?
Oh, yeah. We've got on-demand videos and on-demand radio shows from our old days, Henry.
Yeah, if you look real close, you might see me in one of them.
Hey, you're in one of the mini-movies. You star in mini-movie 27, I believe.
There you are.
But, yeah, thank you so much, guys. We really appreciate it.
All right, you guys have a great night, and we will see you in the end of April.
Gettysburg.
Looking forward to it.
Yes. So thanks for
ice cream.
And mine is at lindagodfrey.com, if I can just get that in there.
Yes, I was going to let you. And you have everything, all your stuff, and how to get a hold of you, and all your books
right.
And everything.
Right, that's my WordPress blog, and again, it's just lindagodfrey.com. You can find a blog and read about some other adventures I've had. There's a list of my books. There are pages about other things. There's a frequently asked question list, and my Twitter name is Linda S, as in Susan, Linda S. Godfrey, all one word all together. So follow me on Twitter. I talk about a lot of things on there that I never mention anywhere else, and keep it up to date. And you can find me on Facebook, too, for both of those.
And all you right. can buy her books on Amazon.com.
Yes.
Sure. And many bookstores all around. Brick and mortar bookstores have them too. So, but yeah, Amazon.com is a good place to go.
And we want you to stay on until after we're off the air too, so we'll talk with you for a few minutes.
Okay.
And you can go to theparanormalview.com and check out our past episodes. You can read the bios of all of us and learn about next week's guest and all the other good stuff. And I know there's a lot of other places that they get our stuff on. We have our podcasts on Podomatic. We also are now on iTunes at podcast, so you can go listen to us there. Cece, got anything else to add to that?
You can probably go to jeffreygould.net and look up
there
Jeffrey.
There you go.
And I think there are arrows and pointers there to get you to the podcast, as well as Jeffrey's other endeavors, acting and otherwise.
And you can find all that stuff, the links to all that stuff also.
ParanormalView.com.
Go to About the Hosts and you'll find all that. Okay. Next week, just so everybody knows, we have another special guest that's going to be on. And her name is Kathy E. Gash, with her book, My Life Amidst the Paranormal. So,
yay!
Just for that, find out all about her and how she was raised.
She's awesome. We met her in Gettysburg.
Yep, sure did. And she's supposed to be back there again in April with us, too.
Nice.
So with that, we are just about out of time. Again, I want to thank Linda for taking the time to be with us tonight. Anything you want to add, Linda, before we jump off?
Just that it was a great evening, and I'd be glad to come back and talk monsters anytime with you.
We haven't even gotten into the flying manta rays.
or the big birds.
All right. Well, till then, next week at the same time, this is Henry
Barbara
Foister.
Duncan.
Pat McCormick.
And Doug Reynolds, I guess. Yes, somewhere.
I had to mute my mic. Yes, Doug McReynolds. Thank you.
We will see you next week then at the same time. Good night, everybody.
Thank you.
If you dare. You've been listening to the Paranormal View on the Para-X Radio Network.